Okay, this is the fourth session on Thursday. It's the Java 8 class files and JVM session. We have four of us.
Five,
including the presenter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, put the mic here. So the idea of it's a hands-on presentation. I want to go through the specification of the replet and actually have a look at the bytecode compiler. It generates and understands how this maps to the language about it. My background is actually I'm not involved with any of these specifications or the process at all. I work on a code coverage tool called Chefoco and the Eclipse integration tablet since many years. So I'm kind of at the end of the food chain. Because everything works on bytecode transformation, so I try to catch up with the latest specification, understand how the new source features are mapped to bytecode, and how I can get it back by source of code. The end is about. With Chefoco, I don't use the bytecode engineering directly. But directly, I use the ASM library. So you have the ASM library. It's a great library. You can learn a lot about the library this time. It's very, very smart thing. What's your background in JVM or bytecode?
Just looking at the performance profile.
Just interested, really.
So, from my current understanding, we have basically two JSRs related to bytecode changes. There's something about JVM itself. We might cover it later on, but I'm not an expert in that at all. So. The big one is the JSR 335, which specifies the lambda expressions and the default methods. This is the funny thing here is that for the lambda expressions, all the work, all the extensions to the class file format and to the JVM specification has already been done in Java 7. All the technical query systems are already there, but they didn't make it into the actual Java language.
Hmm.
But all the method handler stuff and what dynamics, which is used, is already there. So this is not heavily used with Java 8, but the specification was already there with Java 7. Default method is different. Default method is a new feature and changed, actually, not the classified format, but the semantics of what can be in the class file and how actually the method resolution works, especially in the chapters in the specification. But the format itself doesn't change for that. And the type annotations, you can have a look at that if you heard about that. Type annotations?
Heard about
type use annotations, actually. It's a lot of fun, so you can basically know you can annotations everywhere in your code.
Good.
This has changed, the class file format has changed for that. We got new so-called attributes. So basically the whole class file format is based on attributes. Even the code itself, the bytecode itself is an attribute. You get a new attribute. It's a very clever format because it's extensible. So if you have a JVM, you only read the attributes you understand. If you add a new attribute, the specification says you just have to ignore it. So this is an actually an extension that is compatible to the existing systems of work. For this we also got a new version for Java 8. The internal version is now 52. It's a both specifications, the JSR 308 and JSR 335, basically specify deltas to the JVM specification in Java 7. Edition, but I don't know if there will be a Java 8 edition or there will be an update. This is how it works, for example, since from 1.2 to 1.6, they only work with updates of the original specification, but they always refer to the second edition. I don't know what they will do now when they release. Is anybody involved in the specification process or some extra group? Sure. I want to learn something. Maybe we go through the lambda expressions and see some code examples and do the hardware stuff and see how it's mapped by the compiler.
Yeah.
The performance. Here we just grab a function from existing functions from string, and for this, if we decompile that, what we get here is oh, I don't know if I invoke dynamic. So this is the point, this is the method A, and this is where we try to get the handle to the Java, that's the string length function. And what we basically have here is a reference to a structure in the constant pool which describes the so-called bootstrap methods to get the handle to these. And there's a new class called Lambda Meta Factory. It's actually public, it has to be public for technical reasons. But I don't think it's of any use if you use it somehow. And this is actually the method that creates the handle later on for the internally a class is created, or the class is created at runtime. It gets more interesting if we actually look at if we define our own Lambda function, how this is compiled. And it's, by the way, what we just seen is all Java 7 features, right? Invoke stage, invoke dynamic, it's all Java 7 features. I have some examples for that, so maybe later on, if you're interested, we can look into how the invoke dynamic actually works. Now we have our own Lambda definition. In this case, the code for this expression has to go somewhere. And the fun, they call it to unsugar it.
To what?
Unsugar.
Unsugar.
Because probably this is a technical sugar. And they call it the process to make it readable for the JVM to unsugar it. And what they basically do is they pull it out and create a private static method in here. And get a handle on the private static method, like we got on the string. So we decompile this. The first thing we note is that we get a new private static method down here, which takes a string and does exactly the operation across it. We conquer this, of course. This is going on here. Basically, creating a string builder, appending it, and returning the two string method of the string builder. The signature is you get a string as a parameter, and the return value is also a string, which is obvious. Because this is how the function is defined. And again, back at the call side, you see the invoke dynamic. Here we go. Invoke dynamic. This is the expected return value, and this is the bootstrap method. Again, it's used the Lambda meta factory from the Java runtime library. So let's look at some interesting stuff. What's different here? It's the same example as the one before. But the difference is that actually the function we get here has a parameter from the autoscope. And now we have somehow to inject this parameter. And if you see how this is compiled. This is again the unsugar Lambda method. And it takes both. Takes the integer value, which is the multiplier, plus the wrapper type integer, which is the dynamic parameter of the function. And this is how the multiplication works. What we see here is that the multiplier is the first parameter of the method, so it's the first, it has the variable position 1. Because it's a non-static method, so 0 is this, 1 is the first parameter, and it puts that on the stack. So this is some of the magic of the invoke dynamic framework, that we can basically push any number of stacks of we can push any number of types on the stack, and then what we have is simply consumed and will provide it to the bootstrap method. So this is the only opcode in the Java bytecode where you can not do any static checking of the parameters. So for example, if you invoke a method with invoke static or invoke special or whatever, the types of the parameters are always given by the signature of the method. And they invoke static, you can push whatever you want on the stack and it will get passed to the method. And in this case, the compiler decided to directly push the character from the author's scope to the stack. And here's another example where I moved the multiplier up to as a class member. So how's this done now? Like this. And here again we have the unsugared lambda. You have to remember unsugared. And now it's not a static class anymore. It's the first thing to note. Say the unsugared lambda can also be an instance. And it simply gets the multiplier field from this. If you look at the call side, what they do here, they push this on the stack, and this is not specific. So we can combine any example out of this now and sharing the number of other parameters.
So that also means when you create a lambda somewhere that exists as an instance here, and you pass it somewhere else as a kind of parallel function, then
this other this is still a reference to this. Right?
So the other class won't be garbage collected before
I think, maybe we can discuss this tomorrow. Opportunity to create memory leaks.
Exactly. Because you can see that it actually, when the long deep base actually has a reference to.
It's the same like in our classes if you create an NS class.
Yeah. It's true. Yes.
But this definitely is the result. So if I would return the function and pass it around, we'll keep a reference to
which is the I had this once in a system where a lot of inner classes were created by a lot of other classes, and the other class grew quite big. Mm-hmm. So it ran into the memory issues just because of the, not kind of like a factory or so, but there we had like huge amounts of the other classes still lying around, which would have been garbage collected otherwise. Mm-hmm. And then after we changed that to be static inner classes, and all went away.
It is as well. This is, I think, one of the major flaws of the Java compiler with my classes, that if there's no reference to the outer class, in the code still has a reference to the outer class.
Yes.
There's no, actually it could compile in a static way,
yes.
But it's not doing like that. So you really have to create the name static in that class.
Yeah,
sure.
So first static in classes. Yeah.
But in this case, it's intelligent not to make that decision itself. The parameters.
Of course, if you do the static in that class, it prevents you to accidentally create a reference later on because somebody else changes it and references some member.
Because I mean, it's just a simple placement of the user variable, right? So, and that's so easy to, for instance, I move it out because I do need the same variable somewhere else, right? And then suddenly all your lambdas are.
What you obviously can do is...
Is there any way of declaring that I want to have this lambda as a static class? No.
Yeah, you can.
Like a hint or something?
No, we do. So I put it in my... into my
scope.
Thank you.
Sir?
Continue, please.
And what should happen now is that the... The unsugared is again static.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah.
But that's not a
difference.
It's clever enough to now know that.
Yes, but it's a different semantic though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Which can't
be. So it's not track the, it does not track the value of multiplier if it's qualified.
Yeah. So it's interesting what happens if it was not an int, but a reference item object or capital I integer, right?
I think this doesn't matter.
Okay, integers are immutable, but if you have a mutable reference to something.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah,
because the compiler does not consider whether they type to the
or not. Yeah, that's true. But there's no hint that I can put on the lambda like a guard or something like that for computing that.
So that you can get a compiler error.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'd rather have a compiler error.
This is what we can get with type annotations. We can talk about what's this for. But we can like unmodify or something. We can do things like that with the type annotations. But it's not part of the specification. This is just the use case. So let's go back here. I think this question is still the same, static. So the reference is static.
So this is actually slightly dangerous because
if I remove that,
this function will keep refer to the value of 15 even though the reference I initially created has been changed.
That's right.
It's right. Yeah. So it will give you some, why doesn't this work? What does keep 15? I think I should change.
I'll be back to non-static.
It's not entirely obvious.
That's why we get this faster in right?
That's cool.
You need to know how it works and you need to actually understand that it works differently just because you put it into a local variable and then pass it on.
I think that's multiply would be some table object. It's no problem to change its state and it will be passed. And everything that lambda will be static, I think, if we put
of course
reference in.
Of course, in this case, we keep the reference to the to this integer. Yeah. This would be a mutable object.
You would see the changes which
yeah. Changes, right? But it's really a subtle difference we're seeing here. So
yeah.
And the compiler does a lot of magic games instead of using lot static.
Yeah. And you don't notice it, right? So because
I guess we will see in the IDEs, we will see at least some warnings.
Yeah.
You can configure for the inner classes, like you get a warning if you have this kind of references escaping. Probably, maybe the compiler already has, but I don't see it.
So what about lambdas and primitive types? As a lambda is a function of n to result, what about boxing, unboxing? How does it end up?
I think it's the core side. Let's see. So now let's use that. This was the question, right?
So now my question is, if I have, the account of function of int, right?
No.
And that's the problem. So it means as soon as the lambda returns the value, it's a boxed value, right?
Mm-hmm. It's always a boxed value. From my understanding, it's always a boxed value. There's only.
And that might have really nice performance issues, right? Because in a normal SAM, you can also write a method that just returns an int.
Right, it's perfectly possible. But I don't think it's possible for the lambda.
That should be simple because you can write interface with integer.
Exactly. Can you try that? Can you create a SAM that has just a method like multiply, which takes an int
and static function?
You can do this, of course.
So and then I would be interested in the code side kind of what.
We can't see the code side thing, but okay, let's.
Know what I mean? So that if you had a single method interface, it's a standard, you can't access it.
Oh, and then I have to pay, I should change that to get the same.
Yeah. One second.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you can't assign it, but if I have a code site that kind of takes a.
Are you trying to make that assignment? Static reference to a non-static is the problem.
No, it should be able to.
We make it static and it won't.
No, you shouldn't need to. No, you have to type an instance.
It's just that the you.
It doesn't matter, we do it like this.
It's non-static, it's going to take two parameters.
This is a thing.
This parameter.
Yeah. So this should work. Right?
Yeah. But I suppose the point is, you don't have to use the function interface.
So So now what we get here, we get the bootstrap method simply refers to the smart. It uses the primitive types, of course. It does not create a wrapper. And if you call it, it's not it's called. But you only can call it a function.
Yeah.
Can we call it directly? That's not possible.
We can call it in a function, a method that takes an instance of that interface or that as a parameter. Then we can call it.
Yeah. But if we want to use primitives, we have to just create our own interface, single method interface. We can't use this function.
Right.
And it gets interesting probably if we do like strings API. So we have a collection of box things, and then what you apply is a primitive operation as itself, right?
Yeah.
So if you have like a collection of integer dot string dot dot map of more.
This is what you're talking about, right? So again, we get the invoke dynamic here, and now the interface directly invoked, and we can put the primitive type on this. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah. And can you try to do a collection stream thing with this calculator? So you have a collection of integers.
This will end up in boxing.
That's a good question. Or will end up in a compiler or could be as well.
Maybe the compiler even here is not the reference or something like that.
String. Dot map or something. Map and then C.
That's good. Yeah, correct. How are you returning back to? It doesn't work anyways.
So it complains about the.
Sorry, you need a function to map it, right? You need a function to map it, you can't map it. Yeah, then you're back to boxing.
Yeah. But I think the. I'm not. Okay, at least for parallel area, there were primitive ops. I'm not sure if it's too severe, I think they're not.
They just.
But if you write instead of C, the lamp of that one.
Mm-hmm.
This one, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It will implicitly create to a function.
Yeah.
Can we look what it?
Yeah, that would be interesting.
If you don't see the right
code, can I
into it? Can we add it into or?
Can I easily return?
I really want to collect.
Collect, but then I use.
For each, and that will return the.
Consumer? No. There was a simple
kind of two lists or
something? What do you want to get?
To get it back to a list?
As far as I remember, everyone shows.
You pass in a community, but passing a collector, but there
is. For each, and start a collector that gets only value and nothing. Do nothing.
But there is.
So it was something, I think.
That's
right. Okay, try the two lists. It's okay.
Two lists is a
very fast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so. But it works, of course. What we actually wanted to check is how this is transformed, right?
Yeah.
So we have to look at the real truth. Okay, here we go. So here's maybe in the map. And map is invoked with function, and up here is the function created. That's probably a function, pretty sure.
But if I have to put the function on the stack, or? Better than putting it on the
stack. Could you run the same program, but in that move method, put something like print, system out println with. Name dot class. Maybe that will. Oh no, it's unbox will not anything.
So where's the function actually put?
Here we create the integer value, versus loose. We look at them, and here it still goes, And here we get back to the function.
Okay, and the noctuve dynamic takes care then of wrapping of primitives.
So we actually have the function object here and the primitives are printed. So we can't avoid that. This wouldn't work with the streaming.
Yes. That's a really subtle from performance point of view, but also just
box analysis.
We box analysis all the time. I don't know, they didn't have any primitive collections, right? It would have been really good.
Should we have a look at the other features?
Yes.
This was the lambda expression.
This expression.
So I hope we can move through the other quickly. Default methods is not an interesting part. But you know, basically get this, I have say this one, page runnable. What it has is it's runnable and it has a default method, run safe, which basically catches the exception. And if the exception appears, it passes it on to a static method, which is also a new feature. In Java 8. And actually nothing has changed here in the bytecode format except that the semantics has changed. It's not possible to declare static methods and it's possible to declare an instance method within
but it has to be a default.
Yeah, but there's no default, this is just compiler Java language syntax.
So you could actually do trades if you emit a bytecode directly.
You could also emit, you can create a bytecode directly, of course.
No, you can create trades, like mixins, without using default by just emitting the bytecode for having an interface with instance methods, right? Can't you?
Yeah. But there's not, you can even do it in Java language, just write default. What's the problem with default?
Default has certain semantics when the classes are loaded, for instance.
So there's lots of semantics in here for the. This is the funny thing here. For this feature, the bytecode itself has not changed, but the specification has changed a lot.
And class loading has changed.
The method resolution.
And loading as well, because it also checks on load if there are, for instance, conflicting implementation of the default method.
No, it's not on loading, it actually is on. As far as the specification is, maybe it's differently implemented. We have for all these, let's say, method resolution, let's say invoke interface, it checks at runtime and it calls, it throws an abstract method error in case we have. No, it throws. Or in case, or incompatible class change error, these are the most.
This one,
right? I don't know when it is actually performed, whether the call site or the
check. It's often on loading.
But typically the incompatible class change error and the no such method, the abstract method error occur on the first time it's called, but we can try to check that.
I don't think so. I think incompatible class change is on load.
Okay.
Which you want to,
could be the verifier of check.
I don't remember what that's default means.
Or default is you can have default implementations for interface methods. So you add a new interface method to your interface, which was not there before, right? And usually, in before you Java 8, you had to update all the inheriting classes with the new
implementation. And default is in the interface.
Default is in the interface, and it will automatically augment all the existing classes.
It's the interface. We are in
interface.
We implement the method
in
the interface.
And within the default method, you can access other methods of the same interface and nothing else. And if there's an implementation of that interface that implements runsafe itself, then the implementation of the complete class will be used. And if there's none, then the. So it's a bit like mixins and extension method, but interfaces can't have state, so it's not the same as mixins. And it's mostly used for extending collection APIs with strings.
Here, I use this interface in three different ways. This is a classical way, I just call the run method of this interface. We call the run safe. And the third one, I call the static method. The interesting part here is I'm not sure whether it's only about the Eclipse compiler, but I cannot. Put a runnable in here. and call it an arrival. This normally works for classes. It gives you a warning, like you shouldn't use the static method on the instance. But in this case, it does not even compile.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether this is, I haven't checked the language specification.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do the same for
if you compile this,
when do you have to compile it also with JDK compiler?
Mm-hmm. On the Java CL compiler and things like that. Yeah, it's interesting because it should actually work, I think.
So let's see how this compiles. And this is now really kind of interesting. Okay, the first case is we call directly the run method. It's a good one. We call the run method, this is called with invoke interface. This is how it's done with Jin's error. And here in this case, it's also invoke interface. If you are run safe, even if we directly have a reference to the default. So basically, the distinction between invoke virtual and invoke interface somehow became super clear. For me, it didn't make sense since the very beginning, but now we have a use case where it really doesn't make sense anymore.
Exactly the same.
It is work, it is the most concrete method of invoke interface.
Right. And of course, the last example is still an invoke static, and it's important to note that invoke static happens exactly on the interface, so you can't kind of inherit or override the static method. This is like it was ever. So the reference to a static method is always the reference to the type that is actually declared.
So
there's no overwriting possible.
No magic
at all. We try to trick it. And to use the run with the instance, because the compiler on the class of the compiler actually dereferences the thing to the class declaring the static interface. But in this case, the compiler even refuses to do it. So again, here the Java class file format has not changed at all, but there's a bunch of modifications in the how methods are actually resolved. But it's a good idea. Maybe we do it tomorrow to create some examples where we create flashes.
Let's see what.
See what happens on different compilers and different chariots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the fun part. The type annotations. This is who are oriented to type annotations? I just did these days. It's really fun. It's actually type use annotations. And you can basically put type annotation. So this is a typical annotation. The important thing to know for years is that it's type use, element type use. This is a new element type with Java 8.
Are there other new element types in
the other ones?
Are there other new element types for?
Type parameter.
Okay.
These are the ones.
Yeah, these are the ones. Okay. Type use is the problem. Okay.
Type use. And it's really funny that you actually can use it. Okay, you can use it as a parameter. In this case, it's not a parameter annotation, it's actually it annotates the type integer.
Uh-huh.
You can, in this case, it annotates the type double or declaration of this local variable. This is also fun. Instant class.
Can you also use it for class visuals? On class visuals?
You can try this. You can use this, for example, on the constructor. You can use it, in this case, on the parameter of the constructor. Okay, class controls. Let's see how this works.
No, you just not G green in class, but space integer.
Okay, so what this does not work.
Because mm-hmm. Okay. It's also use of the class. And is it possible to use it on extents or implements?
I think so.
Can we So what's the use case for?
Yes.
The use cases is basically in use case is not defined. So there is no use case in the JDK. The ideas what they are talking about is okay. The specification has two parts. It has the formal specification of the syntax, and it has the informal part, sample usage, where it basically shows examples how this could be used, and maybe some of the things like non-null should or nullable should go into the core API.
But nullable is not a parameter, it's not only type used for.
Yeah, even, you can even use it as a local variable, for example. They have, so this is not. So the typical example is like non-null, like read-only,
like A and B. Yeah, I'm really wondering what the...
It's basically for static checking, this is the primary idea.
So to not enable...
static compiler checks, like I will post the link collection. There are some really nice examples for use cases. For example, if you have a collection, an unmodifiable collection, you get a runtime error. But if you could annotate the collection that this is the read-only instance, could create compile time errors.
So that means if I would annotate collections, the unmodifiable collection, the return type of that with read only or something like that? Would then all the core sites also be automatically checked for that? Or would I also have to annotate the core?
Probably the core, the.
We need not the core sites, but the target variables. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I could annotate collections, but unmodified collection or unmodifiable list. The return type of that one, I could annotate with actually only. Right? Is this enough, or do I also have to annotate all the variables that kind of get one of these? Because the first thing would be good, because then it's just one place in the library that you use it. But if I have to clutter my code with these kind of annotations, then it's not really helpful.
Yes, for example, here's an example. Imagine you have a map interface, custom map interface, where you cannot use null values. You can define this non-null, and so you can statically check the core site to make sure that only non-null parameters go in here.
But it's not used in the compiler at all right now, right? For non-null.
No, it's not part of the.
So I'm really wondering why.
Even the non-null or only whatever is not part of the Java API.
Yeah, so I'm wondering really why they put something without any really kind of strong use case for it in without using it at all.
Actually, the same is for the other annotations. The annotations, except the deprecated annotation, the annotations are not used in the core API at all, but they're heavily used in framework like J2E for annotate fields, and so I think they. Demand to have
my
features.
Have started by and stuff like that.
And demand of this feature is coming from the from other projects, not from the JDK itself.
But then there should be probably you just use APT then for annotation processing. That would be actually also interesting for tomorrow to see how the type use annotations show up in annotation processing.
I also tried to figure out how it shows up in the reflection API. There are some new interfaces, but I'm not sure whether the ones within the code are actually exposed, because we cannot have a look at the bytecode and then we understand why it's probably impossible to expose it via API, unless the API is on bytecode level.
So is the jQuery annotation?
I defined it here. The jQuery is here. So
it's runtime. Okay.
It's right. It goes into the class. Right?
Okay.
I can also write class here.
Yeah. Okay, let's have a look at you.
Okay. So we got what examples did we get? We annotated the parameter, we annotated the local variable, we annotated the instance of, of the annotated constructor, and I'm going to delete this. Too much. And there's also funny syntax with, by the way, with arrays. You can annotate any component of the array. So it looks really weird because you can. You should check it later. Okay, let's start at the beginning. This is the constant pool. You're aware of the last slide. This dive, this is the first one. This was the annotated parameter. And here's the new, this is down here, these are the attributes of this method. And there's a type called forward, method forward parameter, and we have a type annotation here. And it points to 19, and we have to look up again in the 19 is Java Creed, right? Okay, now dive, this was the one where I annotated the local variable, the temperature thing. No.
No, it was.
No, so it's in this
version.
Here, this is the local variable, and the local variable is identified by the index where it actually is, and the scope of the local variable. Because within the stack frame, you can reuse the the positions to store local state and assign different variables to it. So we need to specify the position of the local variable plus the scope. Because the memory can be reused within the this number, this is the instance of notation. And here's here's a reference to the
parameters.
And the position where the offset is number one. Offset position coordinate. This is why I don't think it's possible to have an API in Java directly in Java. You can get it with ASM. ASM exposes all of this, but on the low level, so you really get the bytecode offset and things like that, stuff like that.
And for things like return types, we see it, right? So
return types is also possible. This is a different case method return.
So this should be accessible for get generic return type, whatever fetching thing, right? Of course that's part of the signature, not
all. Okay. If you look at the API, I just started the API a couple of hours ago. There's the methods.
The method, there should be something like get generic return type or get. Or you can still use command
I checked the methods here and I didn't find anything.
Isn't there a get generic return type or something?
There's nothing. But
oh no, there's not a superclass.
There's a superclass, right? Called executable. This is the one. And this is a bunch of.
And that's new actually. Executable is new, right?
Executable is new, right? And this has a bunch of methods. There's type, annotated parameter types, annotated exception types, annotated return types, but I don't think there's any annotated returning code stuff.
So you stop at the signature level somehow, right?
Yeah,
it would be interesting in annotation processing how far you
get this post, right? But the specification explicitly does not cover the annotation processor.
Mm-hmm.
There's a disclaimer at the very beginning.
But that's weird somehow, right? Because it should. Because that's the way you could use these methods.
Maybe they try to cut it in smaller pieces
to get it in
instead of trying to cover everything with fade, how it happened with Java 7 for many years. Coming back to the last part, maybe this is where we have another information. How many changes do we actually get for the JVM? Except now the classes get different semantics. The only one I found is the removal of the prevalent generation deep space, which I really like as an Eclipse user.
Well,
don't need any more to avoid
that. But curve steps will be rather dangerous.
It's just moved off the heap. It's not actually.
But it's still constant.
It's not moved into OGEN, but it's moved into a sealed structure.
Yeah, it's far deep.
Okay,
so it's still there.
It's still there. So it's not limited, can fail even
worse. I don't think it's limited, but you can see that leaks.
So Cook said that the process size will increase as OGEN size increases. And so you get then C-level memory issues.
So it's more difficult to debug.
And it will crash your machine.
So
I'm not sure if it's a legal thing to do that. Especially for all the dynamic stuff that's happening now, where classes are generated or applied even more.
So maybe it should be shut up. It's So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cool. We can do many more experiments.
Yeah, we will do more experiments.
More hacking. More.